Welcome to Andrew's Answers, Life's Questions Answered on Konza Internet Radio. This is Dr. Rusty Andrews with Andrews and Associates in Manhattan, Kansas, a licensed clinical marriage and family therapist, and we are here to answer your questions about different issues surrounding the topics associated with mental health. You can send us an email with your questions, and the email address is answers, A-N-S-W-E-R-S, at Andrews, Inc., which is A-N-D-R-E-W-S-I-N-C.net. Follow us on Twitter. Our Twitter follow address is at Rusty Andrews. And you can also check us out on the Konza Internet Radio site at Konza Radio. That's KONZA Radio.org. Remember that when we talk about answers to life's questions, all statements are intended to be helpful in a general way, and answers are of a general nature. They are not intended to take the place of personal counseling or input from a mental health professional with whom you would work directly. Today, we would like to visit with another mental health professional from Andrews & Associates, Corey Richards, who has a master's degree in marriage and family therapy and is also a licensed marriage and family therapist in the state of Kansas. And Corey, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And we decided today that we would talk a little bit about anxiety. It is a topic that many, many, many people in our society deal with on different levels, and sometimes it raises itself to the level of being something that folks need to talk to a mental health professional about. So today it's about anxiety, and that's where we're going to start. And I thought we could start, Corey, by just maybe you saying a little bit about what anxiety is, what it looks like when people suffer from it. Give
sure.
us a definition.
Yeah. You know, it is, when we think of anxiety, the first word I think of is worrying, and that is a good way to think about it. The DSM-4, which is the book that we use to diagnose disorders, talks about generalized anxiety disorder, and you know, that is, according to that book, a clinical level of anxiety
yes.
is at least 6 months of excessive anxiety or worry about a variety of events and situations. And, you know, then it's to the point where it's affecting the person's life functionally, whether that's not being able to concentrate at work with their family, they're feeling tense and restless, easily fatigued, irritable, and muscle tension, difficulty with sleep. And you know what? I've had clients come in and I can actually see their muscles, you know, their tension in their
visible
stomach.
Visible signs of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, definitely. So, you know, and everybody has anxiety. It's just that some people, it gets to the point where they can't regain control over it.
Well, I think that's an important point, isn't it? That everyone has some level of, I mean, we all worry about something from time to time. And so the idea that any sense of worry or anxiety that you have means that you have an anxiety disorder would not be, wouldn't be any place near correct. You're talking about something that really is a long-lasting kind of a sensation, a feeling, a thought process, whatever. It's something that goes on and on and on and really can become almost debilitating.
Yes. Yeah, and many times it is very common that anxiety is paired with depressive symptoms as well.
Oh.
Where the anxiety is, you know, another word I haven't mentioned is creating fear. There's a lot of fear involved with anxiety. Therefore, it traps people in their homes. They don't want to get out because of the fear. And that's very similar to depression, with not having the motivation to get out. And excessive worry, you know, causes sadness, too.
So determining the difference between someone who's dealing with an anxiety disorder as opposed to suffering from depression, it might not be as easy as one might think.
That is very true. Yes. That's one of the first things when people come in with either anxiety or depression, or a lot of times people already can sense that maybe it's a little bit of both.
Yes.
It is hard to first assess that, what they're really dealing with,
mm-hmm.
you know, which came first, or
mm-hmm.
the whole chicken or the egg concept.
Yeah.
But I, you know, depression is when there's a depressed mood most of the day, nearly every day, which is reported by, you know, the client saying they feel sad or empty, or even observations made by others that the person uh-huh. is seeming sad, and that the person has diminished interest in pleasure in almost all activities of their
mm-hmm.
life.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's other things involved with, you know, depression could lead to weight loss, insomnia, or sleeping a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, there's very similar symptoms involved.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I would say that this is the most common thing that I have clients coming in with, and
mm-hmm.
that I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And especially in the winter months, there's another thing that is common and that I've observed is,
mm-hmm.
yeah, of course, the seasonal affective disorder. And
mm-hmm.
when it is cold and gloomy out,
mm-hmm.
it really does affect some people to a clinical degree of where that's affecting their functionality.
So do you have a sense on that it's more, and I know there's not a lot of definitive research yet on this, but there's been some pretty good thinking about it in terms of, is it the being indoors kind of a thing? Is it the lack of sunlight?
Mm-hmm.
Is it just that seems to be a busy time of year,
mm-hmm.
or is it a sum of all of that?
Yes, I would say the root of many mental health issues is a combination of things,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's the same with that. Of there is the science involved with not getting the vitamin D from the
mm-hmm.
sun, and
mm-hmm.
Then just our mental perception of it being cloudy and cold and not wanting to get out when
yeah,
it's cold.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think all of those things kind of
mm-hmm.
play together.
That old thing that used to be called cabin fever, it turns mm-hmm. out, may actually have some scientific basis behind it.
Right.
That we really are affected by being cooped up indoors
yeah.
and for long periods of time.
One thing that I think is kind of interesting that I've learned recently is that some insurance companies will pay for the indoor lights.
Yes.
That can help people with
mm-hmm.
seasonal affective disorder to
mm-hmm.
get that vitamin D, that sunshine,
mm-hmm.
And people have reported feeling better from sitting under the lights in the morning.
The kind of lights where they actually expose themselves to a bright sort of, it mimics sunlight,
right.
The same kinds of wavelengths
mm-hmm.
of light, and does have a positive effect on people, it seems.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
But back to anxiety.
Yes.
You know, the first thing that I talk about with clients is just kind of the general life factors of how is your sleep?
Mm-hmm.
How is your diet? Are you exercising? And do you have social support of family, friends, faith, church around you?
Mm-hmm.
And working with the client throughout the whole process of making sleep more of a routine and setting times and structure to their sleep so that they're not oversleeping or undersleeping, which, you know, sometimes people can't help but undersleep.
Mm-hmm.
But so trying to get 6 to 8 hours of sleep,
mm-hmm.
eating healthy food,
mm-hmm.
not fast food, and getting those right vitamins and minerals, again, the chemistry working in your body for you.
Mm-hmm.
Exercise is so key to another way of getting outside,
mm-hmm.
Usually. It doesn't mm-hmm. have to be outside.
Yeah,
but,
correct.
And getting your body working for you is
mm-hmm.
so important.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, support. Do you have friends who are talking, you're able to talk with and be really open with, and who are checking up on you and
mm-hmm.
encouraging you? if you believe in God, are you able to talk with him and find support from God and people from church? So those are the first things that I talk about to try to get the client thinking about. And then, you know, it's nice with weekly therapy, and then that person has the therapist to kind of keep them more accountable. If someone's not in therapy, I would encourage them to have, you know, a friend trying to keep them accountable
about those, doing those activities.
Yeah.
You mentioned sleep there at the beginning and talked a little bit about that. My guess is that an anxiety disorder, or just people dealing with anxiety in general, even without it raising to the level of being clinically diagnosed with an anxiety disorder, that sleep would be sometimes very difficult. I think about people who lay in bed worrying about things or having an anxiety reaction, laying in bed, they can't get to sleep. They look at the clock, oh, now I only have 7 hours.
Right.
And then the next time they look at the clock, I only have 6 hours, and their anxiety level just goes up and up and up and up. Is that a common kind of a thing that you see?
Absolutely. You know, sleep in itself becomes an anxiety-producing
thing.
That the whole world is asleep but me, and that does not feel good.
It also feels very lonely, which then emphasizes the fact of lack of social connection and support and that kind of thing.
So absolutely, it's its own fear-provoking activity. And we'll get into, you know, the next thing that I talk with clients about is thinking. So worrying is thinking, you know, it's your brain racing. And and so, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy talks a lot about changing the person's cognitive thought patterns. And so that's kind of the next thing that I go to with clients that could possibly help with nighttime racing thoughts. You know, basically we all have these what books and I refer to as, you know, negative automatic thoughts. And it's kind of under our stream of consciousness most of the time, where there are these lies that we believe about ourselves, these thoughts that we really believe that aren't positive, but we just live with them usually because we don't really identify that that's what ends up creating a negative emotion. So what I do right away also with clients is what's called a thought change record, and helping people to identify, okay, right now I'm feeling an emotion. What is it that I'm thinking? What am I believing? What is that thought? And so I have this record that I have them fill out about what is the event that led up to that unpleasant emotion. Okay, what is your stream of thoughts that led up to that? And what is an unpleasant physiological sensation they're feeling as well? Sometimes people may not, who have trouble identifying emotions, they may feel it more physically. Like I was saying before, with muscle tension, your stomach hurting, your head hurting. So becoming aware of those things helps you to realize, okay, this is a, this, I think I'm having a negative automatic thought right now. How can I change what I'm, first identify what I'm thinking, and then change it into a more rational thought? And when I say a rational thought, so let's say, you know, with many women right now, well, for many, many years, but, anxiety provoking automatic thought is that, you know, I'm not skinny enough. I'm not pretty enough. So that would be the negative automatic thought. And so a rational response is taking the time to think about, okay, I have many friends. I have confidence in my intelligence, you know, thinking about the positive things about themselves, or what I'm calling just rational responses to fight off the negative automatic thought.
So really what you're talking about is people challenging their own internal thought processes that self-talk, sort of arguing with themselves about,
yes,
I'm thinking this way, but that doesn't make sense. I shouldn't be thinking that way. It's not helpful for me to think that way.
Absolutely.
And it's not even accurate.
Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what I end up calling it, is self-talk. That, mm-hmm, that's taking the time to listen to the thoughts that are, mm-hmm, going on in your head and, mm-hmm, then reply back. Yeah, mm-hmm, a kind of a little discussion within your, mm-hmm, own mind.
We're not talking about schizophrenia here.
No.
But just being able to have that conversation with yourself. And some people might think that that's a little silly, but the fact is the anxiety is initiating in the brain in the first place.
Right.
So having the discussion in the brain kind of makes sense.
Right. So. Where it's coming from, yeah. Mm-hmm. Solve it where it's coming from. Another thing along these same lines are cognitive distortions. Just in general, ways that people are just thinking in unhealthy manners. And so if you're able to identify them, then usually once you become aware of something that, oh, I'm thinking wrongly in, mm-hmm, this area, then you're able to work on it and do that self-talk again once, mm-hmm, you identify it. Mm-hmm. Some of those cognitive distortions I'm talking about are what's called a selective abstraction. So it means you dwell on the negatives and ignore the positives.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is arbitrary inference. You're drawing conclusions in the absence of supporting evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, an intervention that I'll have clients do is write down a list of, okay, what is the real evidence that you're either, you know, whatever thought they're battling at that, uh-huh, time, that you're a failure. What's, mm-hmm, what's the evidence behind that? Mm-hmm. What's the evidence that's showing that you're, mm-hmm, not a failure?
Mm-hmm.
Another one is overgeneralizing. So you make a negative generalization based on specific events. And that's just another way of saying, too, that, you know, something small has happened, but you make it into this big negative thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Magnification or minimization. You perceive something as far more or less significant than it is. Mm-hmm. All of these are very similar, but
mm-hmm,
personalization, you make an external event very personal.
Mm-hmm.
When maybe this had absolutely nothing to do with you, mm-hmm, but you're taking it very personal. Mm-hmm. And then the last one is an absolute istic,
mm-hmm,
mm-hmm, thinking. You think in terms of it's just all or nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Where, let's say someone's boss made a critique of their work, and mm-hmm, then they're automatically thinking, oh, then I am a failure and I, mm-hmm, should quit this job. And
mm-hmm,
so identify these patterns of thinking is very helpful to learn how to combat,
mm-hmm,
it back into the rational responses.
I'm thinking about that idea of personalization, somebody driving down the road and the light turns red and all of a sudden they're mad at the city engineer who planned the lighting system, thinking that it's about them. They've made them late for work and,
right,
what a nutty city we have and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of just the fact that it happened to be the second when the thing was programmed to turn red.
Right. There's the rational response. Yes.
Yeah. That personalization can really create a lot of anxiety.
Right.
I think about that kind of driving situation, and even to one that may seem a little less unlikely, but somebody behaving in an inappropriate manner as they're driving cuts you off.
Right.
And you assume it's about you, so, mm-hmm, you respond based upon you've disrespected me, as opposed to the fact of, you know, you just really suck at driving.
Right, exactly.
So you personalize it, raises your anxiety, and, yeah.
Okay. Yes.
One of the things you're talking about are all these negative kinds of negative automatic thoughts, mm-hmm, Corey, where it's almost sounds like you're saying that kind of thing goes on without words even being attached to it. It just sort of happens. It's a feeling that occurs. So part of what you're saying is people need to identify exactly what those thoughts are, but that may not be instantly obvious.
Exactly. You know, I've done this thought change record, and after I did it, you know, taking the time to do something structured like this just really helps to identify. I had no idea I was truly thinking these things. Mm-hmm. You know, you get we all have senses of things where we get agitated about, or, you know, we worry about a little bit more than other things. But actually taking the time to do this is very interesting. And you learn a lot about yourself of, wow, I like I've said, I can't believe I'm actually believing that about myself. Mm-hmm. I don't mm-hmm. really believe that, mm-hmm. but it just slides in there and under.
Yeah. Sneaky.
It is very sneaky. Yeah, exactly.
Well, we're going to take a break and come back and talk a little bit more with Corey Richards from Andrews & Associates in Manhattan, Kansas, a licensed marriage and family therapist. And we're talking with Corey today about anxiety disorders and the treatment of those and what they look like. And we'll talk a little bit more about that after the break. Remember, you can send us questions about any topic of mental health interest by emailing us at answers, that's ANSWERS, at Andrews, Inc., ANDREWSINC.net. You can also check us out at Konza Internet Radio's webpage, and that's Konza Radio, KONZA Radio.org. I'm Dr. Rusty Andrews with Andrews & Associates in Manhattan, Kansas, and you're listening to Andrews Answers, Life's Questions Answered on Konza Internet Radio.
My name is Joe Thompson. I'm 29 years old and have a career that I love as a systems analyst. Career. It still sounds cool to say that word. I never could have gotten on this path without a college degree. And if the college man were here, he'd tell you.
I never would have gotten to college without big brothers, big sisters. I could have ended up anywhere, on the streets even. But college? Joe Thompson? Not likely. My big brother helped me out. He taught me I could do anything, at a time when a lot of people were saying just the opposite.
And to a 7-year-old, that means a lot. My big brother's name is Phil. And Phil is the reason that this 7-year-old grows up to be a systems analyst.
Whether you donate money or time, you're helping big brothers, big sisters help a child. And that can last a lifetime. Start something today at BigBrothersBigSisters.org. Brought to you by Big Brothers Big Sisters and the Ad Council.
Welcome to the Maya Miguel Challenge. Meet Maya and the gang.
Oh, hi, I'm Maya.
Maya and her friends want you to get up and play, because it's always more fun to be active.
There's mountain biking, boating and fishing, mountain climbing and spelunking. Let's get started.
Get ready to take the Maya and Miguel Challenge.
Let's see.
Just go to letsmove.gov and look for Maya and Miguel. You'll find tons of fun activities that'll help keep you healthy and active. Muy Activo. You can also check out healthy recipes to try with your family, play cool games, and get free downloads. So come hang out with Maya, Miguel, and the whole gang.
Go!
Remember, whether you play sports, run, dance, or jump in place, just get up and play at least an hour a day. And don't forget, eat healthy to be your best. Maya and Miguel will show you how. Let'sMove.gov. That's Let'sMove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and the Department of Health and Human Services.
Welcome back to Andrews Answers, Life's Questions Answered. I'm Dr. Rusty Andrews, and we're talking today with Corey Richards, a licensed marriage and family therapist, and we're talking about the topic of anxiety and how it affects us and how it can be treated. And Corey, you were saying that it's a fairly common thing for people to have to deal with in this society.
Yeah. And what one thing I have noticed the most is it's a lot, people's worry is a lot to do with worrying about what other people think of them.
Oh, yeah.
Has been a typical theme that I see.
Mm-hmm.
Just basing their own worth and identity on how others perceive
mm-hmm.
them.
Mm-hmm.
And that creating a lot of anxiety.
So then that becomes something that they have little control over. They may have some influence on, depending on what their behaviors are, But in at the end of the day, you really don't control what other people think.
Right, right. But, you know, actually, that's an example of a lot of times people do an arbitrary inference where, mm-hmm. let's say, they saw someone walking down the street, someone they knew, and the person didn't say hello or stop to talk to them as much mm-hmm. as they thought mm-hmm. the person should. Mm-hmm. So exactly, it's not something they can control, but automatically the thought is, oh, that person doesn't like me as much as I
what
like
did I
them,
do to
or,
them.
Right.
Yeah. How did I hurt their feelings? Now they don't like me anymore.
Right. So
yeah,
when
in fact they were just late for an appointment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, that's where I talk about boundaries a lot, mm-hmm. that we can't control what other people think or do.
Mm-hmm.
So, if they really do have a problem with you, well, mm-hmm. then that's their problem, mm-hmm. not yours.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't do anything about it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So realizing where you stop and other people begin, where mm-hmm. that boundary is, and saying, you know, it really doesn't matter because I like myself, or, you know, I've got these things going for me that I don't need to worry about what they think of me.
Well, there's an undercurrent there of what you're talking about that I think some people might see as sort of a paradox, but you're actually talking about being a little more clear about your boundaries, which some people might see as creating distance between them and other people. But in fact, the way you're talking about it really would be a way to be closer to other people.
Exactly. You know, when you put up boundaries, exactly, that sounds bad. Oh, well, you're putting up a wall between yourself and mm-hmm. other people. Well, no, in fact, when you do that and you care more about how you're feeling about yourself, you're actually able to relate to other people in a more mm-hmm. healthy way and mm-hmm. feel more connected and more feel closer to mm-hmm. other people instead of, like it sounds, like a wall, a distance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
It's more like a fence that you can go right up to and talk across as mm-hmm. opposed to a wall that blocks you off from other people.
Right. And better than having nothing in between, mm-hmm. no fence, mm-hmm. Where your feelings are getting hurt all the time or they mm-hmm. are taking advantage of you.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, most people see that as the most loving thing, to have no fence.
Uh-huh.
But it actually protects, it keeps the things in that you love and keeps mm-hmm. some of the bad things out. So mm-hmm. there's positive things about a healthy boundary, not mm-hmm. a tall wall,
mm-hmm.
not having no fence at all, but having mm-hmm. a nice little picket fence.
Well, and again, goes back to that old saying, good fences make good neighbors. Well, there mm-hmm. is some sense behind that. And if you sort of look at it from the way you're talking about it in terms of boundaries, personal boundaries, interpersonal boundaries, or emotional boundaries, that it does create that sense of safety, and it also helps you focus on things that you can control, which are the things about yourself, what's
right.
going on inside of you, as opposed to measuring yourself based upon whatever might come out of the mouth or actions of some other person.
Right, that you cannot control.
Yeah.
So you might as well not worry about it.
Yeah, very good.
Okay. Easier to say than do at
absolutely,
times.
Absolutely. None of the stuff we're talking about is real, real easy, and in some ways has become almost not very natural either. But on the other hand, that's why people have problems with this stuff, mm-hmm. is that it isn't perfectly obvious.
Right.
Whether that's a social, societal thing, or it's just the way we're put together, the fact is that, you know, if this stuff was all obvious, we wouldn't have a job. So.
Exactly. And, you know, so we were first talking about a lot of how anxiety comes from our thoughts. Well, another big place that anxiety comes from is we learn it from our families or the
mm-hmm.
people around us.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that anxiety is very contagious.
Okay.
And so if children are growing up in a home where parents or siblings even are anxious, that tends to to rub off quite a bit. Mm-hmm. If the home just feels tense, mm-hmm. that is going to spread out to the other family members.
Well, I'm sorry for interrupting. You just mentioned something I think that's really kind of fascinating, and the fact that there's something about us as humans that we even say things like, it was so tense that you could cut the tension with a knife. Mm-hmm. You know, when I walked into the room, I could tell there was a lot of tension there. And it's mm-hmm. not like, I mean, we don't really know where, how do we understand that? How do we get that? Because usually those feelings are fairly accurate.
Mm-hmm.
Is it watching visual cues? Is it something else that's going on? We don't know, but it's hard to point at something and say, this is where this is coming from. But
right.
You're right. It's automatic that we can sense, for most of us, not all of us, but mm-hmm. for most of us, it's pretty obvious that right. anxiety is going on.
Yeah. And so definitely, I think what you said of being able to sense the body tensions and mm-hmm. having those visual cues. Also, you know, growing up in a home where there's anxiety, I think parents have a tendency to, if mom cares a lot about what other people are thinking, mom or dad,
yeah.
Thinking about the family, then mm-hmm. there's a lot of verbal anxiety being passed mm-hmm. down of, okay, you need to act this way or do this, or mm-hmm. other people will think this about us. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's not outright said, but sometimes mm-hmm. The message is otherwise very clear.
Yes.
That you need to care a lot about what people think mm-hmm. and that matters a lot.
Even the idea that you get away with certain things when it's just all of you sitting at home, and then when you're out in public, all of a sudden the rules change dramatically. Right. I mean, we all act somewhat differently, but
yes.
You know, from sitting around watching TV at home mm-hmm. compared to being out at a restaurant or something. We talk about restaurant manners or church manners mm-hmm. or those kinds of things. But what I'm more thinking about is a very dramatic and drastic, I'm not going to pay any attention to what you're doing in this home setting, mm-hmm. but we get out and we have to act in a certain way, and it feels very different, like we're pretending to be somebody that we're not.
Right.
And then that creates that anxiety you're talking
about.
That's
a good word. I think that there is a lot of faking it and yeah. pretending mm-hmm. when anxiety mm-hmm. is around.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, too, there's also very overt verbal anxiety being passed around families when there's secrets that it's very outright that you're not supposed to share. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of times there's things that go on at home, and parents will just tell kids, we mm-hmm. don't tell anybody about mm-hmm. this. And mm-hmm. So there's a very overt way that anxiety is within the family as well.
Yeah.
And I truly believe that if the anxiety doesn't stop and mm-hmm. that people aren't learning how to deal with it in a healthy way, they will just continue to pass it down from mm-hmm. generation to generation. Mm-hmm. It's that powerful mm-hmm. that anxiety is just contagious, like I said.
Mm-hmm. And people almost get to the point of thinking that, well, this is just the way the world is. This is the way families operate.
Right.
I've never known any different.
Mm-hmm.
This is the way it was when I grew up.
Absolutely.
And so this is, it just feels normal.
Right. And you know, there's a guy named Murray Bowen who wrote a theory about mm-hmm. this, and he talks about the different family relationship patterns that kind of breed this,
mm-hmm.
is that when, or the ways that families deal with the anxiety, mm-hmm. I should say. And there's four typical patterns, and one is triangulating. So let's mm-hmm. say parents are having anxiety or conflict between themselves in their marriage, and it ends up being they'll bring the child in, they'll triangulate the child in
mm-hmm.
Because that feels more balanced. Something mm-hmm. with three legs mm-hmm. is more balanced than two
mm-hmm.
and so, you know, perhaps a mom is trying to get the kid in on her side, or maybe mm-hmm. it's just that the marriage tension ends up mom and dad are yelling at the kid. You know, mm-hmm. it's somehow bringing in another person to make themselves feel better about the anxiety that's going on within their relationships.
So something as subtle as, well, something as obvious as mom or dad talking to the kid and talking about how bad the other parent is, their spouse is, as opposed to going and talking to that spouse.
Right.
Or as subtle as there's all this tension, and the only way the tension gets broken is for the kid to act up, and so he or she focuses attention on himself or herself, and that brings the parents together, but it's still the three of them. So it can happen in a lot of ways.
Exactly. That's a good point. It may not... Yeah, sometimes the kid is even smart enough to know that if I act out poorly right now, that will stop mom and dad from fighting.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's just how smart our brains are to just know how to... We want anxiety to stop. We want conflict to stop. And so that does happen.
Even
for
if we self-sacrifice. I mean,
in
that situation, the kid is actually sacrificing his or her own well-being in order to sort of, in an artificial way, bring the parents together.
And that
temporarily
happens. That happens so much more than we think.
Yeah.
You know, parents bring kids in for therapy when a lot of times it's the child acting out to try to get the parents back on the same page.
Wow, interesting.
Another way that families tend to deal with anxiety or people is just conflict itself, which makes sense. You know, there's anxiety, so let's fight about it. Let's try to get rid of it by having conflict about it. So that's kind of the most obvious one. However, I should say that I feel that when people say that they're angry, there's almost 100% of the time there is another root emotion besides anger going on, that they are sad, they are hurt, they are embarrassed, something much deeper than just anger. It's much easier to to verbalize that we're angry. That's accepted in our world to say that we're mad, but to say that we're hurt is much, much harder to do.
Those emotions of that express vulnerability, we do hide those fairly well.
Yes. Another way that people tend to deal with anxiety is to distance themselves from it. So that's where you have families where, well, I haven't talked to my brother in 7 years, or he moved to California. 'Cause, and sometimes these things can be healthy. Conflict is healthy. Getting support from another person that may look like triangulation is can be healthy. Someone deciding to move away can be healthy. These can all be good things. But many times, if there's not talking about it in a healthy way, it ends up not being a good thing.
Kind of sounds like you're talking about the difference between doing something purposefully because you've decided this is the best way to handle this, and doing something in a non-purposeful sort of reactionary way without ever really even admitting to yourself what the real reasons are underneath something.
Right, exactly. Another way that people tend to deal with anxiety, and this one I don't think people see quite as much, or they don't realize or that's going on. It's called overfunctioning and underfunctioning. And this is when you see a couple who one of the spouses does most of the household chores, has most of the say, and the other person is perfectly fine with that. They
along for the ride.
Right. And it becomes more of a mother son or father-daughter relationship, a parental relationship, rather than a marriage.
Oh, between the spouses. Yeah.
Right. And it's one way to deal with the anxiety. Rather than both talking about it in an adult way and sharing the responsibilities. And a lot of times people have trouble giving up that control, the over-functioning person. And also the under-functioning person may have some trouble learning how to step up and take up some responsibility. So those are some of the ways that anxiety is dealt with in our family relationships and in a work environment as well.
Absolutely. And I definitely have seen that before. So, it's time for us to take another break. And when we come back, we can talk a little bit more about how to, practically speaking, deal with anxiety and some tips or ideas that people can use to deal with their own levels of anxiety. So let's do that right now. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. This is Dr. Rusty Andrews of Andrews & Associates talking with Corey Richards about the topic of anxiety and how it exists in our world and what we can do to deal with it. You are listening to Andrews Answers, Life's Questions Answered on Kanza Internet Radio.
Set a record or something. And then we went down by a stream and perched up on this huge rock and saw all of these little minnows swimming around way below us. And then I rescued my little brother from an evil slug king who was guarding him at the bush fortress. And my sister and I brought him back to our super twig fort for safety. And then we all laid out and told stories until it got dark. And the Big Dipper led us all the way home.
Whoa! Awesome!
Where were you, Jill?
Yeah. We went to the forest. It's not that far away. Anyone want to come this weekend?
Ask your parents to take you and your friends to the forest this week and find the fun, adventurous you. It's closer than you think. Check out discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Andrews Answers, Life's Questions Answered on Kanza Internet Radio. I am Dr. Rusty Andrews, talking today with Corey Richards from Andrews & Associates, and we are talking about the topic of anxiety and dealing with anxiety. You can send us your email questions at answers@andrewsinc.net. Follow us on Twitter, at Rusty Andrews is our Twitter address. And you can check us out on the Kanza Internet Radio website at kanzaradio.org. And Corey, we said we'd talk a little bit about the treatment of anxiety or dealing with anxiety. And it strikes me that there are sometimes people say, okay, I understand I have these automatic negative thoughts. I understand that I'm thinking that way. I understand my mind's racing when I try to get to sleep. I get it. I get what's going on here. But I can't see me being able to stop that. I can't. I mean, I've tried to stop it. I've tried to tell myself, no, don't think that way. And then I'm thinking that way again. Mm-hmm. Is it possible to actually apply techniques to change patterns of thinking?
Yeah. And that is where, you know, when we were talking earlier about self-talk, so
yes.
So I'm having all these racing thoughts, and so learning to identify that you are, that's happening, and so that's the first step,
yes.
And then thinking of the rational response, and of course, these things, like any other things, take practice, okay, I'm feeling this, and I practice with the rational response. It's much more overt at first, you know.
Yes.
Here I'm doing this. And I have found that once clients start practicing it and applying it, it becomes natural. And it turns into a way of thinking. Again, like the negative automatic thoughts are automatic, and we don't realize they're happening. Just with practice, it's the same thing can happen to where you're not caring what people think of you, or mm-hmm. you're seeing yourself in the healthy ways and you're not even realizing it mm-hmm. too. But yes, it takes practice, and therapy is helpful to have the therapist challenging the client within session mm-hmm. And challenging their thoughts there. And then, of course, the clients have to do the work outside of session mm-hmm. and practicing it mm-hmm. and challenging their own thoughts outside of session to where it becomes a natural thing.
And the whole concept of doing something mentally and looking at it as something that you are practicing, I think is really helpful, because mm-hmm. if you there is this this concept in cognitive behavioral therapy of the continuity principle, which says you can train your mind the way you train your body. Mm-hmm. And if you think about the way you train your body, if you were learning a new sport or something, you know at the beginning when you first tried, you'd get it, you'd understand what to do, mm-hmm. but you wouldn't be very good at it.
Right.
So you'll fail more times than you'll succeed, mm-hmm. but you don't stop after 1 hour of practice at golf or mm-hmm. baseball or something. You stick with it and you see some progress. You see that you're a little bit better at it than you were before. And as you practice and practice and practice, you get better and better and better until that muscle memory kicks in. And mm-hmm. then it becomes almost automatic to do things in this new way.
Yeah.
Same thing with our own mental processes. We practice and practice and practice, and we have a little bit of success. Maybe we're able to deal with those racing thoughts for 7 seconds mm-hmm. the mm-hmm. first time. But then we do it again, and maybe we're able to deal with them for 11 seconds. And
right.
then so on and so forth. And if we look at it that way, it's a process of getting better and better and better, as opposed to, well, I tried that and it didn't work.
Right. That's an excellent point. And I think that, again, there's also some ironic nature in that these usually people with anxiety, they aren't they're not feeling as much encouragement at that point. So mm-hmm. A lot of times, and they're hard on themselves already. So exactly when they feel that they have failed at the beginning, there is this tendency with where they are in their mm-hmm. anxiety disorder mm-hmm. To already give up on practicing mm-hmm. these techniques. Mm-hmm. And so that's what's helpful about having accountability and another person challenging you at the beginning mm-hmm. to keep practicing, keep going. We're much more hard on ourselves when it comes to our behavior than practicing golf or,
yes.
you know, we give
mm-hmm.
up much
sooner. Know what it's like to not be very good at something physically when mm-hmm. we get started.
But right.
We think mentally somehow or other we should just go from not good at all to perfect
exactly.
at it immediately.
Yes.
So. Mm-hmm. Also, with anxiety disorder, there are medical treatments that can be used, and sometimes people will attempt the cognitive behavioral techniques that we've been talking about here, and then perhaps make a decision that there's something medically might be done.
Yeah, and you know that. I failed to mention at the beginning that that's the first thing that people should get checked out is also go to a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
There are many physical illnesses that also contribute to depression and anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Thyroid issues are one of the main ones mm-hmm. that come to mind, and that can be tested by a simple blood test
mm-hmm.
to find out if you're having hypothyroid or hyperthyroid, which has side effects of irritation, agitation, even muscle tension and shaking.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is something also to have checked out by a doctor
mm-hmm.
to see if there's some medication that would help.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then medications that, even if it is just purely anxiety disorder, that medications that in some cases people take on a regular basis,
mm-hmm.
and some people also have medications that will just be used as needed when they are feeling that sense of anxiety.
Yes.
And then this crossover between the two, that it's also possible to have a medication that you know will help you deal with anxiety that you have with you that you take when it's needed, mm-hmm. but the fact of having it with you and knowing that you have it if it's necessary mm-hmm. actually reduces your level of anxiety,
right.
and then you don't need to take it. So,
right, exactly.
There is a more psychological perspective on even the medical mm-hmm. treatments.
Yes, and I definitely think that a combination of medication and talk therapy is the best solution at the beginning, mm-hmm. For sure, to make sure that people aren't just taking medication to cover up some real problems that are going on that mm-hmm. they need to be talking mm-hmm. about. But so the two together go very well together, and medication can help decrease anxiety at a good level to even be able to get to that point of talking about it. Mm-hmm. You know, some people may come in and it's still too difficult, but medication can actually help them talk about it.
Absolutely. I think the research does show that a certain number of people will get better with simply the medical treatment, and some people will get better with strictly the talk therapy, but mm-hmm. Twice as many people will get better with both, with a
right.
combination of both. So there is sort of an additive effect there mm-hmm. In that. So mm-hmm. there are lots of options available, and lots of very good, lots of great medical options and psychotherapy options for dealing with anxiety. Mm-hmm.
You know, other things that I think about with treatment is of anxiety in particular, you know, meditation or mm-hmm. journaling. Mm-hmm. If a person doesn't have someone to talk to at that moment, journaling can be very helpful daily or for sure weekly of getting those thoughts out on paper. There's something mm-hmm. very helpful about getting it out of your head and down onto paper.
Mm-hmm.
All the problems of their world that they can release.
Mm-hmm.
And then meditation, you know, I have just this 10-minute meditation CD that can guide a person into clearing their mind mm-hmm. and relaxing their body and breathing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for myself personally, when I feel tense, when I identify, that's the first step again, is mm-hmm. identifying that I'm feeling mm-hmm. tense and what's going on. Taking deep breaths can mm-hmm. really help you think and mm-hmm. Relax your body.
It does kind of interrupt that cycle, that mm-hmm. tension cycle that exists. You have some anxiety in your brain, you get mm-hmm. tense in your body, your brain sees your body getting tense,
mm-hmm.
then it says, oh, well, we're anxious, and then it increases the level of anxiety, and mm-hmm. it's a big circle.
It's a cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And so all of these things are ways. Oh, I was going to say that meditation, you know, again, people think, well, I'm anxious. Meditation is not, how am mm-hmm. I going to clear my mind? Mm-hmm. That's not going to work. Mm-hmm. But again, it's practice. It's taking the time to work out your mental health just like you would work out your body for physical health.
And to also think about it as meditation is not really, as you mentioned so well, it's a clearing, but it's not an emptying.
Right.
No one can stop thinking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, there's only one point when you stop thinking, and that's at the end of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And many people would say that's not even true.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't stop thinking, but you can put something else in it. And meditation
right.
or prayer time mm-hmm. is almost always thought of by those who practice it as putting something in your mind that then can push those other negative thoughts out. You're replacing those
right.
negative thoughts as opposed to just trying to empty your mind. So in
right.
meditation, you're being guided mm-hmm. with a CD, or you focus on a specific point, or you are open in prayer,
mm-hmm.
those kinds of things. They're actually creating this meditative state in your mind, but it's not an emptying, frankly,
right.
of your mind. It's a replacement with these more positive things.
Yeah. People also find that with music.
Absolutely.
Is another
Absolutely.
Way.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a question here that seems to fit a little with what we're talking about, and I thought I might, this one was sent in to us, and it says, if I hide my emotions around my child, I feel like I am showing them it is not okay to express their own emotions. How can I express my emotions around my child without involving them in the conflict? And Corey, that sounds a bit like that whole issue of clarity of boundaries that you were mm-hmm. talking about as a way to deal with anxiety and not trying to just pass your anxieties or your emotions on to your kids, and yet at mm-hmm. the same time wanting to be a model for them as someone who can handle their emotions. Right. Any ideas here for this person?
Well, I think the first thing that I think about is, first of all, making sure that the mother in this situation is dealing with it somehow. Of course, she should not just be hiding it and stuffing mm-hmm. in her emotions mm-hmm. so that her child isn't seeing this. Mm-hmm. She needs to be dealing with them in some way on her own. And then I think it's perfectly healthy to share with the child
mm-hmm.
feeling words, you know, mm-hmm. of how the mom is feeling. I think there's a lot of times that we in our society don't even have words for our feelings. So it's helpful for mom to express, this is what I'm feeling right now, because mm-hmm. it helps teach the daughter mm-hmm. that these are okay things mm-hmm. to feel, and this mm-hmm. is a way to feel even.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a danger in what she's worried about of showing her emotions all the time and making the child feel like she has to feel that way too for her mother, she has to take care of her mother.
I'm sad, so you need to be sad.
Exactly. Yeah, or I'm mad at dad, so you mm-hmm. need to be mad at dad. Mm-hmm. And that's where that anxiety is mm-hmm. transferred very easily. Mm-hmm. So she's right in being worried about this and wanting to make sure there needs to be a boundary of mm-hmm. where she's getting her real emotions dealt with in a healthy way, but still being able to talk with her child about mm-hmm. those emotions.
Well, and I think that what you say is very wise, in that you're talking about the mom in this particular case
mm-hmm.
Being able to state in words how she feels
mm-hmm.
And then be at the same time aware of whether her child is trying to replicate those emotions mm-hmm. and then be able to respond to their child. No, honey, it's okay. Mommy's sad and you don't need to be sad.
Right.
It's okay. You don't need to be sad. If you want to give me a hug, I'd love to have a hug from you, but mm-hmm. but you don't need to be sad too.
Exactly.
So she's very cognitive about that and mm-hmm. and giving that information of it's okay not to have my feelings. And she's also taking responsibility for her feelings in mm-hmm. this best case scenario that you're talking about. I'm feeling sad, not your dad made me mad.
Right, exactly.
She is in that very, very clearly being a good model. This is what it's like to have emotions.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to express them, but as a person who manages their emotions, I express mm-hmm. them on my terms.
Mm-hmm.
And so I take responsibility for my emotions. I know they're mine, and I express them at the time and place that I choose mm-hmm. as much as possible. It's not always possible, but I do it that way. And so then I'm showing you how this works. And frankly, a lot of kids don't grow up with that kind of example, which is too bad.
Right. And like you said, of course, there's going to be a time when someone gets angry, and so they're expressing their anger or they're sad, and they just you start to cry. And that's okay. But I think it's having, once you calm down, having that conversation with your child afterward that I was sad about this. And
it's okay that I was
exactly.
sad. Exactly. Yeah. Well, that is the end of our program today. I want to say thank you one more time to Corey Richards, a licensed marriage and family therapist at Andrews & Associates in Manhattan, Kansas. Thanks, Corey, for being with us today.
Thank you.
And talking about anxiety. It was very helpful and very informative. I'm Dr. Rusty Andrews, a licensed clinical marriage and family therapist at Andrews & Associates. And you have been listening to Andrews Answers. Please remember that you can send us an email question at answers@andrewsinc.net. Follow us on Twitter at Rusty Andrews. Or check us out on the Konza Internet Radio page at KONZA Radio, konzaradio.org. Andrews Answers is produced by Megan Andrews. Join us again for Andrews Answers, Life's Questions Answered on Konza Internet Radio.